Case number 20-6307, Charlie Barber et al. V. Arch Insurance Company. Oral arguments not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. J. Kent Wicker for the appellant.
Good morning, Your Honor. Kent Wicker. I represent Glendale Hardison, and I will be arguing for all the appellants this morning. May it please the court. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal this morning. This case is before the court because Armstrong Energy, the coal company employer of our clients, paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to buy directors and officers insurance coverage for its directors, officers, and employees. That insurance policy specifically provided for coverage for claims made by the government, including criminal claims made by the government. But the insurance company has refused to pay for that defense, claiming that the pollution exclusion clause allows it to refuse to pay. Now, a pollutant under Kentucky law is something that pollutes. Coal dust is released in the normal course of mining activity, or activated in the normal course of mining activity, and it stays in the mine. It doesn't go outside the mine to contaminate other property, at least under the facts of this case. So it's not a pollutant.
Mr. Wicker, don't we look to the language of the insurance policy as to what is a pollutant rather than necessarily what's a pollutant under Kentucky common law?
Of course, Your Honor. And what I was referring to were those cases like RSJ and Abundance Coal that are looking to the pollution exclusion.
Okay, but we have to look at the same language, do we not?
Of course, Your Honor.
And the problem with the cases I see you citing, particularly the Kentucky Court of Appeals case, it has different language as to, I think, both the definition of pollutant and also the exclusion, particularly the exclusion here, which is sub B, which is the act arising out of monitoring a pollutant. And I think that's the key here, is try to find some case law that's similar to the language of the contract we have at issue.
In other words, just to echo the point, the cases you're talking about didn't have this regulatory exclusion. And that's what it seems to me you got to deal with.
Right. So let me address kind of each of those clauses. So the two cases that talk about the particular language are RSJ and Abundance Coal. And RSJ quotes the pollution definition. And it means any solid, liquid, gaseous, or thermal irritant or contaminant, including smoke, vapor, soot, fumes, acid, alkalis, chemicals, and waste.
Okay, so did those cases have a regulatory exclusion as in 4B?
They do not.
Okay, so, I mean, you can go on and on with those cases, but this is the point of the question. The point of our question is, why are those cases helpful until you can come to grips with the regulatory exclusion in 4B?
Because 4B applies only to pollutants. So it talks about testing, monitoring, other actions regarding pollutants. So you first have to look to the definition of pollutants. And pollutants is defined in the RSJ case, as I've read to you. And the only difference is in, and the part I read to you is identical both in the RSJ case and in the policy in this case. RSJ goes on to define waste, which is not an issue in this case. The policy in this case goes on to list other particular items like mold, fungus, odors, noise, and other things that aren't relevant to this case. So the relevant language in the definition of pollutants is identical, both in RSJ and in this policy. And then you...
Maybe, how about, what was the point of this policy?
The point of the...
Are you trying to make the argument that the very point of the policy ultimately is excluded given the broad definition of pollutants? Is that the way you're thinking about the case?
Well, the point of the policy was to provide coverage in case the government or someone or a private litigant brought claims against officers, directors, or employees.
But when I say point of the policy, could it have been, say, for a mining disaster where the mine collapses and there's an investigation relating to that or some deaths relating to that?
It could be, Your Honor.
Okay, so The fact that the policy would cover something like that, which seems like an Occam's razor point, like the simplest explanation for it, kind of takes you out from some of these other cases which are nervous about an exclusion wiping out the policy. And I'm thinking that's not this case. There's some very broad coverage still for the case, even if pollutants covers coal dust.
Not if you define the clause in the way that the insurance company would like you to, Your Honor. Say there's a mining collapse. Uh-huh. There's going to be a release of coal dust. Does that mean that the coverage is going to be excluded?
That's not an arising from situation.
No, Your Honor, it's not.
Okay, so that would... But this does arise from the insistence that they regulate this, and the response being, you know, could be twofold. We're not going to regulate it. We don't care what you say, or allegedly, in this case, committed fraud.
Well, two responses. First of all, I agree with you that there has to be a causation element in that second clause, the B clause. It cannot be just a coincidental release of coal dust or testing of coal dust that excludes it from the policy. And then the first point is that it still has to be a pollutant. It has to be something that pollutes, something that irritates, something that contaminates, using the language of the policy. And under the Kentucky cases, RSJ and Abundance Coal, you have to look at what the substance is doing under the facts that are presented for payment. And under the case here, there's no irritating, there's no contaminating, there's no polluting. The coal dust is staying exactly where it's supposed to be.
Why isn't it a solid contaminant?
Because it's not contaminating anything.
Well, it contaminates the mine, doesn't it? I mean, of course it's a natural product of mining, but to say that because it's in the mine, it's not an irritant or not a contaminant, I mean, it's just part of the overall function of the mine. And that's why we've got the Black Lung statute, and that's why we've got special benefits, because Congress knows that the coal dust causes problems, causes irritation to the lungs. It's part of the job, but it's recognized by Congress as an irritant.
Coal dust was in the ground long before people were.
Sure.
So using the normal definition of contaminant as something that reduces the purity of some other substance, that's not what coal dust does. The mine is not a dust-free place that it's contaminating. It's part of the natural environment.
Asbestos is probably too, but asbestos is an irritant, a contaminant, and it's probably natural as well, but I mean, just because it naturally arises doesn't mean it's not an irritant or a contaminant, that's all.
Well, certainly the Kentucky courts have looked to whether it's escaping, whether it is polluting, it's irritating.
But we're dealing with the insurance policy. Armstrong Coal Company, I assume, is a big boy. They know what they're bargaining for with Arch Insurance Company as to a policy. They've got attorneys, they've got expertise. It's not like you have an unsophisticated user that's got this insurance policy. I mean, they know what they're bargaining for. And sure, it doesn't cover everything, but that's what insurance policies are. You get what you pay for. And here, maybe they could have gotten more if they had paid for more, but we're stuck with the language of it, are we not?
We have to work with the language that we have.
Sure.
And how that language has been defined in RSJ and Abundance Coal is looking to whether coal dust or some other substance is escaping from where it ought to be. And in RSJ...
But that doesn't... Where's escaping in this policy? I don't see anywhere that you have coverage unless it escapes. I mean, I don't see that as part of the exclusions.
Well, the exclusion does talk about that. It talks about alleged or threatened discharge, dispersal.
Threatened? Okay, threatened. Yeah. A threatened discharge. That doesn't mean an actual discharge.
Right. And there's no threatened discharge. Okay. There was no potential for the coal dust to escape.
All right. But then you also have sub B, which really is the administrative exclusion, which talks about monitoring pollutants. And
don't the state and federal governments regulate the amount of air dust that's allowed to be in a mine while workers are there?
Sure.
Okay, so bingo. Why don't you have an exclusion for that problem?
Because it's not a pollutant. They also
wait. they're regulating it. They don't think it's good for you. Why else are they regulating it?
Of course. But there is no evidence in this case that it was causing harm to anyone. There's no allegation in the indictment that anyone was harmed by the coal dust levels. And in fact, Judge McKinley has excluded on a motion in limine any suggestion that anyone was harmed. But
does the exclusion require harm?
No, Your Honor. But again, it requires the substance to be a pollutant.
The point of regulation sometimes is prophylactic. I mean, and the whole idea is we keep the air dust level down, we have fewer black lung or fewer other respiratory problems. So they're regulating it, and potentially in this case, the policy was just not, they didn't want it to be about that issue. It was for the collapse of a coal mine or some other problem. Why aren't you allowed to exclude that concept?
Let me answer that in a couple ways. The government regulates and requires monitoring of a variety of different measures, uh-huh. including the level of oxygen. So oxygen has to be at 22%. They record the level of oxygen many times a day. And if they do that wrong, the government may bring a claim against them. But we wouldn't say that oxygen is a pollutant, even though it can cause harm if it's in the wrong place.
Well, what we would say is we would look at the definition of pollutant. And, you're probably right when I look at that. I don't think oxygen is covered by that. And so exclusion doesn't apply.
And we also have to read it as the RSJ case did in understanding the derivation of this clause and why it's there. It came out of Superfund cases in the 70s when chemicals were leaking from industrial sites. So that's the context for the definition of pollutant and the exclusion here. And I'll try to respond to the rest of that question on rebuttal.
All right. That's great. Thank you very much. We're here for Mr. Goodstein.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Michael Goodstein on behalf of Arch Insurance Company. May it please the court. I'd like to begin where my colleague left off. The Kentucky cases that we're talking about and that the appellant wants to rely on, RSJ and Abundance Coal, developed the concept of contextual ambiguity because of what my colleague described as the drafting, the history of this provision responding to Superfund crisis. But what is not recognized is there's a detailed discussion on RSJ. And what RSJ explains is that in response to those environmental catastrophes, the commercial general liability market drafted a new standard exclusion that it called the absolute pollution exclusion. And it was that exclusion, and only that exclusion, that RSJ, followed by Abundance Coal, analyzed. And in that context, what there's two pages of detailed discussion of what the market, what the industry said to the market. And one of the things that the court tells us they said was, we don't want to cover CGL policy market bodily injury and property damage that's resulting from intentional polluting.
What's your response to their point that, you know, this doesn't apply to things that are naturally in the air? I mean, like, maybe it doesn't apply to carbon dioxide.
The whole point is of testing for coal dust is because of its propensity, if in excess amounts, to cause severe respiratory injury. So it isn't something that is innately benign. The very reason that this testing exists, the very reason that the appellants were indicted was because they deliberately, allegedly manipulated those testing devices by taking them into rooms where the air was clean so that they wouldn't reveal the contaminating exposure nature that the miners would otherwise suffer.
Would this apply to carbon dioxide?
I honestly haven't thought about whether it...
What do you mean you haven't thought about it?
Whether it would apply to carbon dioxide.
I was thinking about this definition for the last couple of days. It's not possible you don't have it locked into your brain. Carbon dioxide does not look like it's covered to me.
Well, I've been focused on the argument as to whether
that could be regulated. Carbon dioxide could be regulated, the amount of it in the air. I mean, they are making a basic point that... and I think that's what the cases reflect of... Gee, let's not construe this in a way that gets a little bizarre.
But that's where I was going. Yeah. Is what were they saying was the bizarre result that they were? The bizarre result wasn't that this is always going to be a pollutant. The bizarre result was you said to the market, commercial general liability insurers, that you intended to cover accidental polluters. But if we read the exclusion that you wrote and take those words at face value, we'd exclude even the accidental polluter. So the contextual ambiguity that RSJ created and Abundance Coal then followed was we're going to create an ambiguity to make sure you don't escape that liability and avoid or apply an exclusion to accidental pollution. That's all they did. But the whole notion that they define pollutant as requiring some necessity that a pollutant actually be released also misses the difference between the language. In those cases, again, we're talking about the standard CGL exclusion. What is it that the pollutant relates to? It relates to, if the standard exclusion, bodily injury or property damage is excluded if it is caused by a pollutant. In other words, the CGL exclusion is presuming bodily injury or property damage. It can't apply if it doesn't. That's the
what would be some good examples of accidents or other incidents that would be covered by this policy? Proving that the exclusion doesn't wipe out the essence of it and that your client wasn't collecting premiums for non-insurance. Right, so that's a flavor of the argument. What are some obvious things that would be covered and aren't excluded, whether by this or something else?
Remember, this is a management liability policy, and Armstrong is not in the business of coal dust. They're in the business of coal.
Go ahead. What are some examples?
The most obvious one is the exclusion, unlike a CGL policy, provides a carve-out. And that carve-out says, notwithstanding the pollution exclusion, coverage would apply to any such claim that is about the purchase or sale or securities of an insured entity, typically an M&A objection kind of claim, or a shareholder demand, or a shareholder derivative action. So if we had these same exact facts in this case...
So just maybe dumb it down for me just a little more. So you're saying it's mainly about a hostile takeover.
One act would be like if they acquired another company for too much money, and the directors and officers were sued for that. It doesn't have to be a hostile takeover, or a classic derivative action based upon these same facts. The company was injured by officers' breaches of fiduciary duty that resulted in a diminution in value of shareholder collective value. But more fundamentally, so the exclusion itself says that even a claim that involves a pollutant, there are covered claims. But there are numerous claims that could arise that would never even implicate the pollution exclusion because Armstrong is in the business of coal. So
would it apply to a collapsed mine?
No.
So the directors and officers are sued because they weren't paying attention to who the CEO was or other regulatory responsibilities. The mine collapses, three people die. The directors and officers are sued. What happens in that one?
So that potentially could be covered if it's a breach of fiduciary duty claim. So that again, that's an important distinction here. And why is that important? Because if the claim was brought by those who suffered injury as a result of that, people who may have died or property that was damaged, that's never covered under this policy. Separate and apart from the pollution exclusion, nothing ever comes within the ambit of this policy that deals with that kind of injury or damage. This is a policy about economic damage. So in other words, if property damage or personal injury is required, because that's what the Kentucky cases that the other side is relying on look to, because that's what the exclusion said. If that is required, then this pollution exclusion has no meaning. It's simply the whole point of the testing subsection, which doesn't exist in any of the CGL policies, is because it's adding something that isn't dependent upon any release by its plain words and doesn't depend upon any injury because the D&O policy doesn't apply that. In other words, if you were to require actual release of a contaminant for this testing subsection to apply, the testing subsection has no purpose because actual release is covered in the first half of the first subsection. The other side just can't give any meaning to this provisions and is trying to graft onto it requirements from cases about CGL policies that fundamentally are designed to cover property damage and personal injury. And all of
the arising from language, which does look like a causation requirement.
Except it's broader than that. And as we explained in the brief, it's arising out of, based upon, or related to.
I mean, that looks like cause, then just a bunch of synonyms for cause.
Well,
that's a classic lawyer move, right? Well, use three words where one would do. I mean,
maybe a classic policy drafting.
Okay, but that takes you back to arising from, based upon, attributable to, or kind of all getting at the same point. And for them, that same point is causation.
Right, but here's the difference. And if you look at again back at what these exclusions say, the standard, it's called exclusion F in the CGL policy per RSJ. They exclude bodily injury, property damage arising from a pollutant. This exclusion that the court is construing and analyzing today doesn't start there. It excludes any claim arising from a pollutant. So we're not looking to causation about any injury. The question is, does the claim itself, and here it's this criminal proceeding, arise from or is it based upon a pollutant, a testing for a pollutant? And that plainly was the case here. To graft on a causation, you have to change the beginning of the exclusion, make it read like a CGL exclusion that was at issue in Abundance Coal, and that's simply not what's at issue here today.
Okay.
Thank you.
If you have any other questions, thank you, Mr. Goodstein. All right, Mr. Wicker, you've got your rebuttal time.
I do, Your Honor. And I'd like to make a couple points. First of all, the policy does not limit its coverage to property damage. It includes defense costs as well. And defense costs for claims based on wrongful acts, both of those terms are defined in the policy. And in this case, there doesn't have to be a property damage. There's no suggestion of property damage. But there still should be coverage for the defense of the claim based on that wrongful act. Second point is we've been talking about claims for hostile takeovers or derivative actions, I want to remind the court who the appellants are. They are employees of Armstrong Energy. Armstrong is bankrupt. There is no way for them to be indemnified by the company. So they are the employees who are insureds under the policy. They would not normally have a risk of a breach of fiduciary duty case or a hostile takeover case, but they still have coverage according to the terms of the policy. And I suppose the point, Your Honor, is that the insurance company could have drafted this pollution exclusion clause to always incorporate coal dust. It could have listed it by name, or it could have incorporated some list of chemicals that the government publishes and updates on a regular basis. But it didn't do that. Instead, it gave a functional definition of pollutants focused on what the substance was doing, contaminating or irritating. And in this case, the coal dust wasn't doing any of those things. So it's because the insurance company has that ability to draft the policy the way it wants to draft it is why we construe it against the company.
How can you say coal dust does not irritate when that's really black lung, isn't it? I mean, it is an irritant. I mean, that's...
You know, Judge, a lot of scientists would disagree with that point about whether there is any long-term damage from
coal dust
at low exposures.
Oh, okay. Well, does the exclusion require a high exposure for it to be excluded as opposed to a low exposure of irritant? I mean, it just says irritant.
When it says any. Any doesn't suggest that, you know, you've got to hit some level before it counts as a pollutant.
That's right, Your Honor. But I think it has to be taken in a reasonable, common sense way. Your carbon dioxide example was a good one. At some level, carbon dioxide is fatal. Carbon dioxide can certainly cause damage to the environment. But I don't think that it was intended to be excluded from the policy when it's where it's supposed to be doing what it's supposed to do. And that's what coal dust was in this case. Reading that pollution exclusion clause too far just brings into ridiculous results where there is no coverage provided at all and the policy becomes illusory.
Okay, thank you so much for your arguments. We really appreciate it. Thank you for your helpful briefs. This is not an area we spend a lot of time in, so thank you for educating us. We really appreciate it, and thanks as always for answering our questions, which we appreciate the most. Case will be submitted, and the clerk may begin the process of calling the next case, which may take more than a few seconds.